Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right. Good morning, everybody. We are continuing our conversation about everything that is going on here in Los Angeles and across the country, its connection to the sports world and other aspects as well, including our next conversation with Carl Douglas, who is a friend of the program. Of course, he was a member of the famed Dream Team and O.J. Simpson's defense team, specializes in police brutality cases as well. Carl, it's good to talk to you again. Thanks for coming on. How are you?
Hey, Travis, man. Thanks for having me, man. I'm really looking forward to talking to your audience.
Yeah, Carl, we I know you're tired of going through this and seeing this. You've been watching this for Lord knows how long. You've been on a lot of defense teams. You've been a part of this thing. You remember the riots. You remember the Ron Settles case with young Johnny Cochran back in the day when he was murdered in the cell by the police officer. So this has been going on so long. When is it going to finally change and stop?
Keyshawn, let me tell you, man, first of all, police brutality has not gotten worse. It's being televised, man. Gil Scott Heron once said that the revolution would not be televised, but that's before there were cell phones. This is the revolution. You know, man, black people cannot stop racism by ourselves. Power concedes nothing voluntarily. But black people need white people to get white folks to change their minds. They won't just listen to us lecturing them.
You know, I don't even think stopping racism should even be considered part of the goal. You know, you can't police thoughts. You can't police, you know, feelings. I think the goal should be stopping your racism from killing people. It needs to be the goal. So my question to you is, you know, once we get past this particular juncture in the conversation with the protests and the rallies and things of that nature, can you tell the listeners two or three tangible moves, steps they need to make in order to have significant change in this community that we're in right now?
Absolutely, LZ. This was a weakness of culture. The police officers that day with George Floyd had the temerity to keep acting that way because of a culture which is fueled by the police way of living. There was a cop just a few inches away from Chauvin's shoulder who could have tapped him on the shoulder and said, enough is enough. But there lacked a sense of humanity between these officers and that man. What your listeners can do first and foremost is to continue to demonstrate peacefully. Change does not come without protest. Power never gives up power voluntarily. They have to make it matter. It matters because it costs them votes or it costs them money. What your listeners can do, LZ, is first to vote in the upcoming elections. What your listeners can do is to take part in the civil and criminal justice system. When that summons comes to their house, don't throw it away. Go call in and go to court and participate and tell other jurors that what these officers are saying to you is not the way it really is here in the streets. We have to have more participation by people who care so that we can make changes that are structural and lasting.
Carl Douglas joining us here on The Morning Show. You can find him on Twitter as well, at CDE Esquire. And Carl, with that culture in mind, and you've handled a number of these cases, and we've been talking about this a lot over the last couple of days. Do the good cops want the bad cops out? Because this is the question that I keep asking. Why you just mentioned that man standing behind the officer who had his neck on or his knee on George Floyd's neck, standing there with his arms folded, doing nothing. Do the good ones want the bad ones out? And if so, why don't they put the finger on him?
Travis, the greatest challenge with reform policing is to eliminate the code of silence. That is what is wrong. Officers don't want to report other officers doing wrong. it will take a while, regrettably, for true reform to come on. There are going to be more black people who are killed unfairly, and they will be videotaped. There will be more protests. It will take a while for the middle-level cops to get older and to retire so that more reform-minded officers may take their place and change the culture in the police department. Look at the abortion rights and the years it took for that to come to the fore. Look at gay rights and the years it took for that to come to the fore. Look at the legalization of marijuana, something near and dear to my heart, and the years it's taken that to transform. There will be change. I am hopeful. There are cops, brother, who are now kneeling with protesters. I'd never seen that. There are cops that are marching with protesters. I thought I'd never seen that. There are white folks in Australia and New Zealand who are protesting about black lives in the United States. I thought I would never see that. I am hopeful change will come, but it will take some time.
Carl, can change happen amongst the police commissions throughout the United States and kind of put some sort of governing body in there that could, I don't know, institute some community activists on those commissions to kind of get people that understand the community, or should it just stay the same the way it is now?
Keyshawn, in theory, community involvement is important if the leaders of the police departments are willing to accept their leadership. In Los Angeles, you have the LA County Sheriff who refuses to accept the leadership of the police commission that was assigned to watch the sheriff's department. So that's a problem. But it is the way of the future, and it's the only way that you can hold officers responsible for their conduct. And that's what has to happen, man. Think about the chokehold, brothers. I was there in the 80s when cops were choking black men, and the police chief said there's something different about the structural positioning of a black man's neck, and that's why these black people are dying. We filed lawsuits in Johnny Cochran's office, and we made the city pay money. Power concedes nothing voluntarily, and eventually, because it was costing them too much money, the police department changed its tactics, and black folks don't die by the chokehold from the LAPD anymore. Change is possible, but it takes time.
Yeah, I see San Diego police or county just outlawed their chokehold, which is ridiculous.
But Keyshawn, the killing part, man, is there are so many forgotten men where there were not videotapes of their death. I represent the family of a 56-year-old black man, 5'4", 145 pounds, who was suffocated just like George Floyd on March 13th of 2020. There was no cell phone camera, and he leaves a wife and 7 kids in his wake. And I had to explain to his wife why there are no protesters for the death of Oro Nunez Sr. There are still changes that we have to make this country great.
When you hear the phrase "all lives matter" juxtaposed to what you're seeing in the street, what goes through your mind?
What goes through my mind is the unwillingness of the majority community to accept that black lives matter too. And that's what is so important, man. You have to feel that sense of community. You don't see white folks suffocating white folks who are trying to be arrested. You don't see black cops suffocating other black defendants by having their knees on their neck. You gotta get cops out of their cars. Chauvin wasn't even the first cop on the scene in Minnesota. He came on the scene and then took over. You gotta have community-based policing so that people understand that those that they are supposed to protect and serve have blood coursing through their veins as well. They have mothers and fathers and sons and daughters as well. There are more things that connect us then that draw us apart. But you got to change the culture. People are police officers for a certain kind of person. I wouldn't want to be one. You wouldn't want to be one. There's a certain personality that draws towards policing work. And we have to continue to change to make it better for all of us. Because but for the grace of God goes me, my son, my brother, my father, or myself.
Carl Douglas joining us here on the morning show. And Carl, you mentioned a couple of times that because everybody's got a phone in their pocket right now and they can record these incidents taking place in real time, that we got a better sense of what's happening. Is there any data? Are there more cases of police brutality? Are there fewer? We're catching more of them on tape, or is it just the same as it's ever been?
It is getting better. I am hopeful. Reform is slow, but it comes to the major cities first before it filters down to Minneapolis, regrettably. Although Minneapolis has one of the most progressive police chiefs I've ever seen, because he deigned to walk without protection into the ground zero and give his respect to the memory of George Floyd. The brother lived a block away from where George Floyd was killed, and it will take more officers like that to show compassion and to voice that compassion in the face of our president for there to really be change that will matter, Travis.
When you look at the looters that's out there in the streets, what can we do to not allow the message of protesting to be hijacked by the media as showing mainly clips of the violence opposed to the positive protesters like in LZ, like we've seen in downtown LA, like we've seen in Minnesota and many other places?
My fellow Dorsey Don, that's a tough question, man, because there will always be those that will want to exploit the well-intentioned, and we can never forget that. However, we can't lose sight of the larger mission so that we don't let the narrative become hijacked, man. We can't let our president talk about dominating people who are protesting safely just a few hundred yards from where he speaks. We have to continue to speak up. We have to be like the sisters who were videotaping those people who were defacing one of the stores and saying, this is not what we're about. We have to take charge of the narrative ourselves so that it's not hijacked by those who don't share in the message.
At some point, you know, we're going to, you know, start to rebuild businesses or take the boards down. What sort of message do you think Garcetti needs to say in order to make sure that he recognizes what transpired and that it's not going to be business as usual?
You know, LZ, I was not an original supporter of Eric Garcetti, but I must say I am impressed by the show of humanity that he has displayed over the years. I represent the mother of a woman who died in police custody. Her name was Waukesha Wilson, and her mother had a private meeting with Eric Garcetti, and they sat together alone in his office and prayed and cried. That is something that was not publicized, but it spoke to me to the humanity of Eric Garcetti. He has a very difficult position, and everything he has said and everything he has done is not without criticism. But I am hopeful that he has the spirit and he has the leadership that will send a calming message and an uplifting message to those that are yearning for some leadership, for those that any police death across America strikes African Americans in Los Angeles particularly strong, because it simply removes the scab that has been existing here over the necks and throats of black people for most of my 65 years on this great earth. But I'm continuing to be hopeful, man. I got to be positive. I'm going to go out this morning and try to make life better for my client. And I hope all of your listeners continue to demand that the police be responsible. They take responsibility, that they demand that they treat us with humanity, and that they demand that all lives matter and black lives matter as well.
Carl Douglas joining us here on The Morning Show. Carl, appreciate your time this morning. Always appreciate you coming on with us. Thanks a bunch.
Fellas, next time,
you,
have
sir.
Me back, please. I love y'all.
City bet.
All right. There's a lot there, guys. Let's come back and let's talk about what Carl just said, and we'll continue our conversation moving forward. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. I guess I feel a little better, guys, hearing Carl say what he said, that the progress has been slow, but there has been some. That there are fewer cases of this than there were in our past. But, you know, like maybe, again, this is the silver lining of these videos, that they're, because they exist, because we can have more accountability in police departments, maybe that is the pullout from these stories, that it's not overnight. It's going to take, I mean, we've been talking about it for years and years, decades even, hundreds, centuries. But maybe the phones will help. Maybe seeing these videos, if there is a video, will help. And we'll believe the next guy that doesn't have a video. We'll believe the next guy that's saying, look, this is what happened to George Floyd, is exactly what happened to me. There was just nobody there with their camera. Maybe we'll be a little more willing to listen to it next time.
And I think it's, and I think that is true. He's a professional in this particular area, so he does know. He knows the research. He's been doing it and practicing for a very, very long time. I mean, you can kind of see there's going to be subtle changes along the way. And, you know, as you look at it, like he said, he's defending a case right now. And the wife wanted to know, well, why everybody's not protesting for her lost one. But there was no phone involved. But he is putting on the case to prove the point. And then you got the Floyd situation, or you got the other situations that have been put on camera. And you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, there's going to be some on camera, some not on camera. But much like you're saying, Travis, the ones that's not on camera and the ones that's winning that is on camera, people are going to start believing. So you're going to start to get a little bit of change. You're going to start to weed out the bad, older cops that have a certain mindset in place. They start to fade out of the equation. And now you get the younger generation of cops that's not going to put up with a situation. I was explaining to you guys, I saw on the news the other day, and I don't know if it was Atlanta or D.C. It was one of those cities where a police officer had taken out the stick and the baton and was hitting a few people in the protesting, and one of their own officers pulled out their gun on that protester and pushed him out of the on that officer and moved him along, basically telling him, if you don't stop, I'm going to put one in you.
I mean, it starts just like that. You know, earlier today, I talked about my own personal experiences and, you know, trying to break into this business, being openly gay in sports. But there's another example that, if you can't relate to that, think about this. Prohibition lasted for 13 years. The amendment, the 18th Amendment that made prohibition possible, took decades to get into the Constitution. And then once the United States was dry and there was all this activity, what you saw was a groundswell of people saying, no, 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 we want the choice to drink or not to drink. And now prohibition is a thing of the past. Now, we still have some dry counties peppered around the United States, believe it or not, we still do. But the law itself has been changed because of the groundswell of the people. So as we continue to have a groundswell of the people, just like alcohol prohibition has changed, just like marijuana prohibition has changed, just like marriage equality has changed. If you had told me back in the 90s that, you know, same-sex marriages would be the law of the land, I would have laughed you out of my face. But here we are. It didn't change through osmosis. It changed because a coalition of people got behind a movement and made the thing work. So as I continue to go out in these streets and I see young people, older people, politicians, business leaders get behind this thing, we can identify and make significant change to change the system that's in place right now that has fostered the distrust, so that when we see the okey-doke trying to get pulled on us, we know that the justice system is going to stop the okey-doke and not co-sign the okey-doke. Think about what they were trying to do with George Floyd. Think about this. Almost cursed. I'm so pissed off right now. They try to tell us that because he had some pre-existing conditions health-wise, that was the reason why he died. You remember that coverage?
Yes.
Police was trying to say, he had this and he had that. We sitting here looking at man have a knee on his neck for almost 10 damn minutes, but they try to sell us the okey-doke that he had pre-existing conditions. This is what we got to stop. This is what the movement is about. So as long as we can stay together, I have hope that we can change it.
You know, this is a far more trivial example of what we're talking about, but it's similar. You go back to the ridiculous notion about the code in Major League Baseball, right? That for years and years, there was this idea that you hit a home run, you put your head down, you ran around the bases, you shook hands with the next batter, and then you sat down and, you know, pretended that you were almost embarrassed that it happened. And now we see guys that'll do a little bat flip or sit there and watch it. And what used to result in a fastball into somebody's back the next time they came up is less frequent. There are still guys out there enforcing the stupid code, guys like Madison Bumgarner, who, you know, Max Muncy hits a ball into the bay and he wants to fight the guy between first and second base. And Max Muncy tells, you know, go get the ball out of the ocean if you don't like it. But we're seeing it change. That stuff never took place because guys were so terrified of violating the code. And now you have at least half of Major League Baseball. And to Carl's point that you reiterated, Key, the younger guys like Bryce Harper saying, dude, I don't care if a guy flips his bat. What do I care? Let's have some fun. Let's make this happen. Where a guy like Puig can show up and bring his own brand of style or whatever you want to call it. And we just say, okay, look, I'm not saying Mike Trout needs to flip his bat, but if he doesn't want to, fine. If Puig does want to, fine. It's happened really slowly. It's taken decades to get to the point where these little silly things are tolerated, and it's movement. Like all these other things. Like I mentioned, this is far more trivial. But it does happen, but it doesn't happen nearly as fast because the three of us, we watch Yasiel Puig hit a home run and flip his bat, and we go, cool, all right, he hit a home run. Why not? And if he wants to walk around the bases on his hands, what do I care? But for older people, for people that come from a different generation, it's always disrespecting the game, and we look at them like they got frogs on their faces, right? And maybe this is another example of just it takes far too long for those of us that want to see the change, but the change is happening.
Yeah, and that happens in all walks of life and in different environments. Everything happens. You go to football. Before, when I was playing, I tried to have individuality with my cleats and be different. Now there's certain months that you can wear cleats, but what they did is they said, well, it could be for your favorite charity, but they still are allowing it to happen. It takes time for things to change because – their mindset was way back, you know, 1960 mentality, you know, where you can't do this now. You can't do that now. Now it's changing where they're allowing football players to do some individuality things more like the NBA to a degree. They're not going to let you at this present moment completely do it your way, but they're giving a little bit of room. So you get change. I mean, it does happen, and we expect for this to – start to change a little bit more. If you go all the way back to 1992, I'll say it again. You didn't have white people out there protesting and rallying with us. Now we locked arm in arm.
All right, we're going to hear from some people inside and outside the sports world coming up next, their response to what's going on. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
During our conversation with Clinton Yates earlier this morning, he was talking about how he was far more impacted by the individual acts of protests and the statements that some individuals have released as opposed to some teams and some entities and some brands. And Malcolm Brogdon was on First Take, and he's somebody else that's been very outspoken through all of this as well. Let's take a listen to the Pacers guard, Malcolm Brogdon.
Change tomorrow as far as pushing the conversation forward. You know, Black people are impatient at this point. That's why we see so much of what's going on. Black people are at the end of the rope. We have, you know, no other means to sort of demonstrate how we feel. So short term, I think we have to continue to protest, continue to demonstrate, continue to push the conversation forward, and continue to bring in those people that are of these high quality positions into the conversations, because those are the ones that can enact change now.
I think it's amazing the impact that an individual voice, especially an athlete's voice, can have, because you can see on the okay that, you know, I don't want to put any team in there specifically, but such and such a team doesn't stand for this. Okay, yeah, you would think that would be the statement that's coming out of it. But when you see the individual, and because so often these individuals will be seen as that one individual and not just a member of the team, I think it just lands and has so much greater impact when it's from one guy, whether it's Patrick Mahomes calling him senseless murderers, whether it's Malcolm Brogdon saying what he says, those guys individually, Trey Young was involved in protests yesterday. It's incredibly impactful relative to, oh, this team hates that sort of behavior.
Well, it is impactful, but at the same time, you got to know that the individual players really speak from the gut, the heart. They really feel it, and they understand it, where the corporations and the team owners, they understand it and they see it, but they also are in protection mode. They don't want to upset anybody. They kind of want to tote the line, be able to have it both ways. That is the way it's always been, and I don't think that part of it, for the most part, is ever going to change.
You know, it's always good to see people, no matter what walk of life profession, use whatever platform they have, voice they have, to raise it up when they see injustice or something's wrong. When an athlete does it, they obviously bring a lot more weight to it just by their positioning in life. Because it's not just about when you're a professional athlete of a certain status, and Malcolm Brogdon was a rookie of the year. The fact of the matter is that they also have connections to powerful business leaders, owners who are billionaires. They have connections to apparel companies. You know, Nike obviously rules the world. Adidas is right there with them. So when an athlete speaks up, it's not just simply about their voice. It's the fact that their voice also has access to power and resources. And so as they do these interviews on televisions or tweet out images, I hope they realize that they have so much more strength than that. That if you are a Jordan brand athlete, you have way more power than a simple tweet. You have access to the Jordan brand. And by proxy, that means you have access to Nike, which means you have access to Phil Knight, which means you have access to the world. So when an athlete speaks up, to me, that's a fantastic first step. A fantastic first step. But they got power, man, because they're at the table. And when you're at the table, one, you know you're not on the menu. But two, you get to talk about what should be on the table to eat, what we should be having. You get to contribute in a big way. So I'm proud of Malcolm. I'm proud of all the athletes, both, you know, retired as well, who have used that their voices. But now let's use your muscle.
Key, do most athletes understand that it's more than a statement, that like LZ just laid out, that I have access to people that can change this more quickly than I can through their wealth or through their access, that if I get to individuals X, Y, and Z, they can magnify this message and amplify this message much greater and more quickly and more effectively than I can. Mine is a grassroots. They have a direct channel to the halls of power.
You do understand, and I think most athletes understand it, but what happens because we want them to do the certain things and we want them to use their platform, a lot of them are typically afraid to, because they don't know what the ramifications and the outcome is going to be, because for so many years there's been ramifications in black balls and things of that nature. So depending on what your status is and depending on how you feel, depends on how far you're willing to go. And I think LZ knows that. And so as the
– when you say how do you feel, what do you mean by that?
How do you feel? Like, do you feel that are you so embedded that you feel everything that's going on? Because some people want to isolate themselves and don't want to be involved. I mean, we went through it, obviously, with Michael Jordan many years ago. Some people don't want to be involved. Some people want to stay and secure themselves. So it just depends on how you feel. You know, when this sort of stuff, when I was a player coming up and these sort of things were to take place, I was getting involved. I was right there because I wasn't worried about protecting anything. I was worried about helping as much as I can, sending a message, being a part of the solution, not protecting the problem. And some people don't see it that way. So it all just depends on who those individuals are and how they feel about this current situation that's going on. You automatically assume just because a person happens to be a black athlete that he's all in, he's all you. People don't dive in like that. Mm-hmm. They just don't. They sit back and test the waters and see what's going to happen before they make the initial commitment to go all in. But there are opportunities to touch the bases. If I was playing right now and this was going on and I was on a team, I ain't got no problem going to the owner or going to the PR people and saying, man, that statement ain't what you mean. You stay in general.
Would this statement from Tiger Woods be that testing the water statement? I've always had the utmost respect for our law enforcement. They train so diligently to understand how, when, and where to use force. This shocking tragedy clearly crossed the line. That seems not a half measure, man. I don't know what that is. I mean, to qualify with, I love the cops and they train how to do this, and yeah, this was bad. I mean, my goodness.
He should have just not, shut the hell up. But here again,
before LZ goes on the attack, here again.
I'm done. He should have just shut the hell up.
But here again, Travis, here again. Who did you say that was from?
Tiger Woods.
What did you expect?
Humanity.
What did you expect, though? Doesn't mean he doesn't have a soul. Doesn't mean he doesn't have a soul.
Key, if you watch a
but
guy
doesn't
get
mean
choked
he doesn't
out
have
street,
a soul. Doesn't mean that he doesn't have a soul.
Is, you know, just, cops usually train how to do that better. I mean, I don't know. I don't see it. I don't see the soul.
But
there.
here's what I'm gonna say about Tiger. Tiger's not going to. That's why I said, who is it from? Tiger's not going to step out like that. He ain't never stepped out. Why would you expect for him to step out? He's not going to do that. So that statement is perfect for him. If he said something other than that statement,
yeah, Key,
it wouldn't be who he is.
I get that, and you're right. But I'm going back to what we were talking about, you know, yesterday and for most of the day today, that this time it's different. That this time people who may typically not be involved are involved. That it's reached the point where people who could ignore it are choosing not to ignore it.
So let me ask you this question real though, Travis. Real talk. I'm going to ask you a real question. And I want you to really give me an answer, or else you can't go play golf with me at Shady.
All right.
Who do you think has more black friends in terms of an inner circle? Michael Jordan or Tiger Woods?
Oh gosh, Michael Jordan, just because he was in the NBA, and Tiger Woods has grown up in the golf world.
Okay, and who do you think could care less about offending their friends, Tiger Woods or Michael Jordan?
Care less about it?
Yeah,
Michael.
That speaks to who Tiger is. Tiger Woods is not going to. He's not going to cross that line. He's just not. I don't know no other way to say it.
Which is why I was like, he might as well not have said anything. Because it's like all that does is just is a minor irritant. If you don't say anything, I'm not thinking about you anyway. Life rolls on. But now you've irritated me. So instead of helping things or whatever you thought you were going to do, has the opposite effect.
He did a statement because they told him to do a statement, man. Come on.
I'm running out of bandwidth trying to find silver lining in people who want to toe the line to appease racism. Like I'm just being real with you. I'm just running out of bandwidth to working with this idea that they're a good person. They're not racist. They just don't want to offend the racists who are help lining their pockets. Like I'm just running out of space for that.
So the question becomes, is doing nothing better? Because that's what the Knicks did. And that's what Jim Dolan did specifically. We'll talk about that next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. So a number of teams have issued statements. A number of individuals have issued statements. And some of them have been incredibly powerful and emotional. Others have been tone deaf and neutral. And it's just terrible. And then, of course, you've got the Knicks, who did not issue any sort of formal statement at all. There was an internal memo sent out to the employees of Madison Square Garden explaining why they've decided not to do anything from Jim Dolan. And one of the portions of the statement is, quote, "As companies in the business of sports and entertainment, however, we are not any more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters." That to me, fellas, is the part that I my eyes are bugging out of my head. As a human being, as somebody who runs a business, we're all qualified to offer our feelings on what we just saw. We can all describe how we feel when we see something like this happens in front of us, and the people that are supposed to protect us are not. I don't understand this. Well, you know, I run a sports company, therefore I'm not allowed to offer my opinion, or I don't have a solution, therefore I say nothing. I mean, if the option is to do nothing and then add this on the back end, this seems like the worst option of all.
Well, the interesting thing is, much like LZ always talks about too, who's in the room with you, right? Like who's working there with you? Who's your president of your team? Who's your general manager? Who's right there saying to you, pushing back on that? You know, does everybody in the building look like you and align with you? Because clearly, you know, when we have these conversations about certain ads that are put on television based on the marketing departments and things of that nature, when everybody in the marketing department is white and there's nobody that's black in the ad agency to be able to say, no, that's not what we're getting ready to do. You see some crazy stuff out there, and we all sit there and say, who in the hell signed off on that? Right? I mean, that's what we –
sure.
This is the same thing. Who else – you know, if I'm working for the Knicks and I am at the top right next to his offices down from mine, and this comes out, I'm going to step to him and say, man, say, we can't – this ain't what is going on in the world right now. Like, we had conversations – about, I'll take you behind the curtain a little bit for the fan base. We had conversations prior to this thing really exploding to where it is today on our pre-show meetings about what we were going to talk about. If me and LZ didn't mentally say to ourselves, this is important to us, to get everybody to understand that, who knows what would be concentrated on. Because clearly for us as two black men on a show, Travis, not to put you to the side, honorary black brother, but
thank you.
Sweet tea in the house.
To have me and LZ, can't nobody else do what we doing on morning shows throughout this state right now and speak to these protesters the way we can, because not only are we black, we've lived it, we've breathed it. But if this is a all white show, the conversations is different. They just different. And that's the same way when you don't have people in the room, it ain't going, you know, it's going to just kind of be, go ahead, I'm going to go play golf now. That's what's going to happen. I'm getting on my jet and I'm going to go to my beach house. The issue that statement, Linda, and I'm going away.
This is how you end up with a noose on the cover of that golf magazine in reference to Tiger Woods. Now, separating who is about out of the fact that it's just overall offensive, for a variety of reasons, they didn't have the right people in that room when that decision was made. They published an article about Tiger Woods with a noose on his cover, and then were shocked that people were outraged. But had they had the right voices in the room to begin with, it would have never gotten this far. And I'll share another story with you that happened directly with my experiences here at the company. There were conversations about having a black athlete on our cover for ESPN, the magazine, and on the cover, he was with a monkey, right on his shoulder, a monkey. And someone brought it to me and says, "What do you think?" And I was like, what is this?" And another person saw it, and another person saw it. And then the black voices on that floor, you know, VP on down, my boss, me, we're like, "Hey, man, let me tell you, you can do this, okay? Because we're not the bosses. We can't tell you what to do. You can do this, but let us tell you what's going to go down once you do." And we saved ourselves from ourselves. When people talk about diversity and inclusion, this ain't just about check boxes for some HR worksheet. You know, you look around like, okay, we got a black, okay, we got this, whatever. No. It's not about the skin color. It's about the worldview being represented in the space.
Absolutely.
It's about the talent being represented in the space.
Absolutely. And I've been in similar situations, and I will take my hat off to the people on the NFL side at ESPN, because they have communicated with me throughout the years about different things that we was doing. And you know how these ad agencies are, ad agencies, marketing departments, the whole deal. And I remember us shooting a promo one time. This was, you know, as you look back on it in retrospect, it's funny, but at the same time, it's who came up with this damn idea? Then when you go and you look at the people, you sit there and go, "Oh, okay, I see." You know, and I told you about the story where all of a sudden it's us. We had this whole farming section type deal we were getting ready to do for a promotional shoot. And we put on everybody had the same little uniform, straw hats. We look like farmers. But at the end, we get the script and we looking at it, and they got us bending over, kneeling down, and they got the two white dudes standing over our shoulders, you know, Chris Berman. And Mike Ditka, while me, Chris Carter, and Tom Jackson, we in front of them kneeling down. And I had to stop and look and say, "Man, we're not getting ready to do this." And then once I said it, then the powers that be got it and took a look at it, and they said, "Yeah, that's probably not a good idea." If no one ever said anything, they'd have shot it, put it in the can, and the next thing you know, it would have been on air. I mean, that's just how it is, unless you got somebody in the room.
We'll continue that conversation. Plus, I want to get into the conversation, LZ, that you had yesterday with the head coach of the Chargers, Anthony Lynn. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.